This podcast is intended as healthcare practitioner education only and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
The tricky part about postpartum thyroiditis is that its presentations often commonly overlap with what you would naturally see in those first 6 weeks of postpartum. So it can be quite tricky to just see them through the symptoms alone. And that's when I kind of call upon maybe some blood tests to kind of help in identifying whether there is a postpartum thyroiditis picture at all.
It's the hardest thing for me is that as a counsellor is that a lot of the thyroid symptoms mimic mental illness. And because there's such a strong component of mood changeability with thyroid disorders, so it's nearly everyone that I've got it, I'm holding it in mind.
This is BioConcepts Between Clinical Minds, the podcast that's open-minded enough to take in all sides of a clinical story. You'll hear from researchers, doctors, naturopaths, nutritionists, and patients. We look at common clinical presentations through a different lens. It's open, frank, and sometimes controversial. Nothing is off limits. Will it change the way you treat? We'll leave that up to you. In season 3 of BioConcepts Between Clinical Minds, we look at thyroid health. We talk to experts in the field who will take you into their clinics and share their experience. I'm Tony Chambers, and this is BioConcepts Between Clinical Minds. In this episode of Between Clinical Minds, we discuss the common presentation of postpartum thyroiditis with naturopath Shantini Inkaran and counsellor Suzanne Hurley, both consult from the Melbourne-based Fertile Ground Clinic. Shantini Inkaran's clinical focus is postpartum care and says postpartum thyroiditis is a complicated presentation to identify.
Postpartum thyroiditis is actually an autoimmune thyroid disorder, which generally occurs early pregnancy, but most commonly presents postpartum. It's classically defined as the occurrence of thyrotoxicosis followed by hypothyroidism in the first year after delivery in women who don't have a history of thyroid diseases prior to pregnancy. But there are three different stages, actually. It isn't often just the classical presentation of thyrotoxicosis or hypothyroidism and then hypo. Sometimes there can be the presentation of a transient hypothyroidism, which essentially develops in the first few months and then resolves itself. Then there could just be the transient presentation of hypothyroidism. And then classically, the postpartum thyroiditis, or PPT, presents as transient hypothyroidism and then flows into a hypothyroid state.
And how prevalent is that picture in your clinical practice?
Relatively prevalent in terms of now that I've become more aware of it as well. Statistically, and studies suggest that 1 in 25 women are impacted by it. So that's about 5 to 8% of the population. The tricky part about postpartum thyroiditis, is it okay if I refer to it as PPT?
Yes, yeah.
So there's a handful of words there. is that its presentations often commonly overlap with what you would naturally see in those first 6 weeks of postpartum. So it can be quite tricky to just see them through the symptoms alone. And that's when I kind of call upon maybe some blood tests to kind of help in identifying whether there is a postpartum thyroiditis picture at all. But often if a patient in the early onset of like when they fall pregnant and I've been seeing them from trimester one till postpartum in the bloods, if anything presents with any form of like antibodies, then that's often a marker for me. And if they tend to tell me there's any presentation or family history of thyroid nodular disorders or autoimmunes, then that's often a time that I'd also think about that and look for those signs and symptoms in the postpartum period.
So those symptoms that you mentioned kind of cross over with some of the symptoms that women would generally experience in the first 6 weeks. Would they be kind of the mood type symptoms, or what other symptoms?
It definitely varies. Like similar like how we just talked about earlier, how in the first 6 weeks you tend to see a bit of a hyperthyroidism, which actually presents mostly asymptomatic. So you don't really see those symptoms, though there would be mild presentations of like muscle weakness, insomnia, heart palpitations, poor focus, and like intolerance to heat. Kind of red flags for me would be when patients present and say that they're noticing extreme hair loss, which again, it comes with that time of postpartum, but also unprecedented weight loss for their constitution. So that's when I'm like, oh, okay, there's some symptoms. But then the general presentation, and most times women present with PPT, is when they've already entered the hypothyroid phase. So then you start to notice those very classical symptoms of fatigue, loss of memory, poor concentration, again, muscle weakness, dry skin, aches and pains and cramps, constipation, mood, like depression, low moods, problems with exercising. Then they tend to move to sensitivity to colder temperatures. And then you see that weight gain picture. Often a patient, when I'm speaking to a patient, they obviously don't highlight all these symptoms, but they'll normally come in and tell me, hey, I'm feeling really sluggish. I have no energy. I'm not motivated. Can't sleep well. My brain feels like it's really mushy. And then there's this extra sense of stress because now they're feeling all this stuff and they're feeling more stress on top of being in this postpartum period and then starting to feel frustrated. And then that leads into some of that mood stuff as well. So, but again, very tricky sometimes to differentiate this from what would generally be a very exhausting and transitional period for a mother. But then I guess that's when we go to some testing, I suppose, to help narrow it down a bit.
So given that it's an autoimmune kind of presentation, can we kind of go through why women might develop it? Like what are the kind of mechanisms going on behind the scenes?
I mean, the irony is that one of the causes of it is pregnancy in itself. because during pregnancy, women tend to experience this major immune shift from TH1 dominance to TH2 dominance. So then there's a bit more of a, how do I call it? They call it like an immunological rebound that follows. So they go through this shift in immunity, but then in the final like end of trimester, third trimester, and immediately after birth, the immune system swings back to a TH1 dominance, which is a more of an inflammatory state. And this inflammatory process begins PPT. So you start to see the presence of antibodies like thyroid antibodies, TPO and TG. This activates the complement cascade. And then there's increased levels of IgG1 that could be lymphocyte abnormalities, and then increased activity in the NK cells. So then this inflammatory process activates the proteolysis of the thyroglobulin within the thyroid follicles, resulting in that follicular, like the thyroid follicles just being destroyed, and then subsequently flooding the bloodstream with significant amounts of T4 and T3, resulting in that first phase of hyperthyroidism.
As far as blood markers are concerned, are you wanting to see the whole picture, as in obviously TSH, but the T3, T4, reverse T3, and all of the antibodies? Or is there something in particular that you're looking for in terms of the development of thyroiditis in pregnant women? So obviously you probably, if you're seeing them right from the beginning, you're looking for the changes.
Yes. I mean, and that's a really important thing in terms of preconception care and early on in the pregnancy, like getting a full thyroid function panel, including like T3, T4, the antibodies, if possible, and then TSH, because going alone on TSH is actually quite unhelpful at times. As you'd know, at the beginning of the pregnancy, HCG is quite high, and HCG almost in a way replaces TSH, and it fluctuates T3 and T4. So we don't get that accurate reading, but it is important that I have these markers, or anyone has these markers. But the key markers definitely will be the antibodies. That would be the giveaway in terms of what's going on. But then also looking and taking into consideration any other things that's going on in the woman's body, if there's any gut issues, insulin resistance, those kind of things. And those markers are really important that contribute, I think, to this inflammatory process or exacerbating it. Because not only is it the immunological rebound and the inflammatory state, but it's also the stresses of just completing a pregnancy, delivering, then it's all the poor sleep, maybe poor nutrition, like that makes that mother more vulnerable. Mm. So not only am I looking for the antibodies in terms of a marker, but I want to actually see her full bloods to see what else could be contributing or exacerbating to this inflammatory process.
But what are some other kind of driving inflammatory forces for the woman in this stage?
Not only is that immunological rebound, but you're thinking about in pregnancy, there's a very high progesterone picture, which means a bit more lower inflammatory. And then you start to swing back into that high estrogen level. So that transition and fluctuation, again, I think is very much contributory to that inflammatory picture.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's also similarly the just environmental circumstances of the woman, like in terms of how much support she's getting, what nutrition she's getting. And this postpartum or the fourth trimester period is essential for a mother and the new family in terms of, you know, getting the right nutrients, supplements, care, emotional and physical support. And I think that contributes to that dysregulation in the HPA axis as well, which then, as you know, is a cascading effect into an inflammatory response as well.
How soon after they deliver their baby does that develop in general?
Well, I have the school of thought that the inflammation is already happening even before we start to see the symptoms. Because, you know, from a cellular level, it takes time for us to then see inflammation occurring in a symptomatic form. But generally, it develops 6 weeks after delivery.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of postpartum thyroiditis cases present with the symptoms post 6 weeks.
Mm.
And in terms of the thyrotoxic or the hyperthyroidism phase, it generally occurs between the 1 to 3 or 4 months after delivery. Studies have shown that it can last for at least 3 months. But then it's more common actually for women to present in their hypothyroid state. So that's when we start to pick things up more.
Mm.
And this can typically begin actually much later, like 4 to 8 months postpartum, and also carry through for another 9 to 12 months. But usually if managed and treated well, depending on what the interventions are in terms of herbal, supplemental, medicinal, the body kind of rebounds back.
Mm.
It generally shouldn't move on to anything more permanent, but as I mentioned earlier, it can.
Suzanne Hurley is a counsellor with the Fertile Ground Group in Melbourne. She has naturopathic training, so she's always on the lookout for thyroid dysfunction amongst her perinatal patients, including those who are postpartum.
And because there's such a strong component of mood changeability with thyroid disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nearly everyone that I've got it, I'm holding it in mind. And depending on where they are in that perinatal stage, how sort of strongly I'm urging them to get tested.
Mm.
So, and because, you know, they've either recently been pregnant or have a new baby or they're experiencing infertility, they usually have had some sort of testing fairly recently. But it's really fascinating how many people, particularly after having a baby, or being pregnant, so, you know, sometimes pregnancies that end early are indicated as well.
Mm.
And it's amazing how many people I'll say, look, I think you really need to rule out thyroid imbalance and along with the other mood implicators like B12, iron, D3, and get some blood tests done so that we just don't start off trying to fix something that we can't fix through talking therapies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually my baseline. It's amazing how many people say, oh, yeah, that's right. My thyroid was out before I got pregnant, or it went out when I was pregnant, or something like that, where they've known about it, but they've forgotten to check in with their GP once, you know, all the hullabaloo has settled a bit. So it's just one of those things that does seem to fall off people's radar.
Mm.
But, you know, essentially they're coming probably for anxiety symptoms or depressive symptoms. And so we're in that territory anyway where, you know, with anyone I'm starting to think about, you know, let's just rule out some deficiencies.
Mm.
And so it's a very, very common presentation in that sense. In fact, I had two people this week. They came in back to back, one after the other. And they were face to face. So I was present with them in the room and I could feel their anxiety. Mm. And both of them said, this is not like me. You know, I've never had anxiety before. I've always thought, oh, can't be that bad. And then they're like, oh, my goodness, it is really bad. And I said, well, have you done a thyroid check? And both of them said, oh, no, I haven't done that. Mm. And particularly, you know, with any of those periods, it can happen over a very long period of time, can't it? Yes. You know, even infertility, people are tested for their thyroid before they start treatment, but they could spend a year or two mm-hmm. trying to conceive, have a number of miscarriages. All these things place them at risk of their thyroid going out of whack, but they're not doing regular testing mm. through that unless their specialist tells them to. Mm. And often they don't. They'll go, oh, yeah, we checked your thyroid, that's fine. But in the meantime, they've had several pregnancies or just the fertility drugs can be, you know, really impact people's mood, mm. great changeability. So the hardest thing for me in some ways is to just make sure that people are keeping up with their blood tests and are recognising that it's a risk factor for them.
And you mentioned that it is quite common. I'm not looking for specific numbers, but, you know, I'm just trying to get an idea of how common it would be, like, in, you know, one in two or, you know, four in five or...
It probably is something like about one in five
yeah.
people.
Significant. It's 20%.
Yeah. So it's, you know, they're coming back and either saying, I did the test and everything's fine. So then we're like, great, good to go with working with the other things that we can work on. Yeah. Or they're coming back and saying, yeah, my thyroid was really out and I've started medication. And it's like, well, if they hadn't have had that mm. picked up, then it could have gone on and developed into something much more terrible.
Mm.
So it's such an important role, I think, for counsellors or other people who are not working directly into medical care that they have an awareness of the impact of pregnancy on the thyroid. Mm. And just, you know, I'm in nearly every stage of perinatal stress that because I work right through the whole reproductive domain of stressors that can happen, terrible things that happen to mm. people. And so stress is a part of all of those things. Mm. And so it is going to play a role with the thyroid hormones. And people forget, I think, you know, I think we've gotten very used to this idea that stress comes from outside of us and it's because of things that are happening.
Mm.
But there's an awful lot of internal stressors going on with all those body changes, whether you're having IVF treatment or being pregnant, having miscarriages, having a baby, you know, the demand on our systems is so much greater.
Is there a picture that you can kind of paint for us of the type of person, type of woman that might present with postpartum thyroiditis?
It's a good question. Each one of my patients have had it been quite different, which is the unique factor about PPT
yeah.
in its way.
Shantini and Karen.
But I think one is like if there's already underlying stress mm-hmm. in one's life or the pregnancy tends to become more stressful for the mother or for the woman in particular. And then there are other environmental stresses as well, like financial things, or there's been a history of alcoholism. The age of the mother as well are some factors that I think could attribute to a bit of a picture. But the funny thing about PPT is that you may not have any presentations or any family history of an autoimmune or thyroid nodular disorders. And then it presents. But I think looking after oneself throughout the pregnancy, doing the necessary things like ensuring that there's enough, like, say, iodine or selenium support for your thyroid health, vitamin D through your pregnancy as well to support those immune functionings as well, omega fatty acids again to keep that inflammatory process in line.
Can you mention the main players in each of the stages, nutritionally and herbally, that might be considered?
definitely a good prenatal from day dot till at least 6 months postpartum, one that also contains a bit of selenium as well. There's lots of studies towards that now in terms of thyroid health and function, and even possible prevention of PPT, but still more studies to be done on that. Vitamin D, immensely important throughout pregnancy, but again, for multiple immune supporting properties, helps with reducing inflammation and then maintaining immune homeostasis. NAC, also to help with antioxidant support and reducing inflammation. I feel like all of this stuff is pretty much pivotal throughout all three trimesters. Of course, there's certain needs and requirements that change, like the amount of protein that one might need, or more choline maybe in the second trimester that would also support with a thyroid picture. But again, things that I consistently would prescribe, again, omega fatty acids, predominantly in more concentrations of DHA and EPA in the later half of the pregnancy as well, just to help with lactation as well. One of the things that I think also adds as a secondary stressor for mothers, new mums in this postpartum period, is that ability to lactate or breastfeed easily or with enough support. And I think one way of developing that or supporting or encouraging that is with all these nutrients. So hopefully lactation is a bit more seamless for the mother and reduces that stress as well. Again, iodine, but again, to prevent any deficiencies throughout the pregnancy and to assist with thyroid gland health. Again, to just be cautioned and mindful of how much in dosage, because the thyroid gland is quite a sensitive gland. And gut health is really important, I think, in terms of probiotics to support and restore any immune control or moderate any overactive immune responses. In this picture, B12. And my go-to favorite, and anyone who doesn't know me as a naturopath, is magnesium.
Yeah.
One that's definitely enriched with like mitochondrial nutrients, you know, things that help like Bs or zinc or even some vitamin C to help with that adrenal support would be fantastic. In terms of herbs, I haven't particularly delved into too much herbs in terms of thyroid health when I deal with my patients. I do use a lot of Glycitrax in terms of lactation and breast milk support.
And you made a good point earlier when you said there are a number of things that you check, like thyroid's one of them, but you check B12 and other deficiencies. And you made a good point about if that's not right, then talk therapy won't work. Can I explore that a little bit more with you?
I think if there's an underlying physiological disordered state, then talking therapies won't address that because you can't change, well, I don't believe that you can change a physiological state just by talking about things and integrating your experience and, you know, you're in different territory. You really are in comprehension and cognitive functioning that, yes, you know, can be impacted by our physiology. So it has to be ruled out. I think that, you know, there are with many disorders, it is a process of ruling out other implicated possibilities. So it's a big one for me. Low iron's really massive in the community as well. You know, invariably someone has had to have an infusion.
Yes.
And as a result of, you know, those sort of mood changes that they've experienced that aren't like them. And then they, you know, I send them off to the GP and they go, oh, wow, yeah, my iron was really low and I had to have an infusion and I've got to have another one. Yeah, I don't really, you know, I sort of recognise the limits, I suppose, of counselling and, you know, all the different domains that you're having to hold in mind that you can't fix everything. And that is, you know, the bottom line with all of it as a practice, but that literally there are going to be things that walk in the door that can be explained in another way.
I love that you have that perspective of looking at those deficiencies and those testings as part of your care for someone. Apart from iron, B12 and thyroid, what are the other things that you find it really does impact the patients that you're seeing?
Certainly the D3, that's the other one that's important, but certainly, you know, trauma. Mm. So if there's been birth trauma or there've been really significant stressors outside of just being pregnant and the demands of that, then, you know, and particularly IVF and infertility, it's really, really changes people. And, you know, how that marks them is really important to honour and to value and to validate and to be very present to this person's experience and to not hold assumptions, I think, you know, that I know better than you. It's always a process of exploring what's going on in that person's life that might be significant to you. And people do live with really significant illnesses and that are, you know, very deeply challenging, and yet there's not a lot of visibility in the world for that. Often these disorders are literally invisible, and if they're not taking good care of them, and if no one else has even suggested, wow, that's amazing that you're living with that, that's amazing that you were pregnant through that, that's amazing that you're caring for a newborn baby with that, that you're actually acknowledging and trying to enhance that visibility of whatever is going on for them internally, and to make sure that they've got the carers that they need, the people who are holding them in mind. I love building a team around people so that they're not just reliant on me, but they've got a gorgeous acupuncturist who's nurturing them. They've got a naturopath who's filling them with nutritional goodness.
In the next episode of Between Clinical Minds, we continue the conversation, this time on the development of thyroid conditions in perimenopause, with Fertile Ground naturopath Georgia Marin and integrative doctor Lucy Karate. Thank you for listening. We hope this podcast engaged and empowered you. And thank you to all of our experts. You can read more information on each of them on our website, bioconceptsengage.com.au. If you enjoyed this episode of Between Clinical Minds, please refer a friend and share the love. To continue the conversation, you can contact us at bioconceptsengage.com.au, where community is more than a concept.